Welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're analysing the recent sweeping French presidential election success of Emmanuel Macron. We'll be asking our panel of experts, has populism in Europe missed its chance? And could Macron's resounding success represent a real change in the continent-wide political dynamic? Or is it too soon to say that? We'll consider too the best way for Macron to begin to address some pretty profound challenges in France, old narratives we're familiar with, industrial relations, structural reform, high unemployment, especially amongst younger people, and his campaign pledge to reduce spending by more than 60 billion euros. Plus, with parliamentary elections ahead and all 577 posts up for grabs, what are the particular challenges facing République en Marche, and does its inexperienced leader have what it takes to build an effective government? Of course, through all of these complexities, we'll also be asking, what does all of it mean for investors? So, has populism in Europe missed its chance, and could Macron's resounding success represent a real change? Does Themis Themistocleous, head of the European Investment Office at UBS Wealth Management, he also oversees UBS European Research, agree with that, only partly?
If we look at what's been happening to the support for populist parties, it's actually been rising, and we shouldn't ignore that trend. Yes, Le Pen didn't do as well as the polls were suggesting before the elections, but she still got 34% of the vote, a lot higher than the previous elections 5 years ago. If we look at the Dutch elections, the same situation. The Freedom Party didn't get quite as high support as the polls suggested, but they increased their number of seats in parliament. So yes, maybe these parties are not doing as well as the polls predicted, but I wouldn't go as far as saying they missed their chance and we should just relax now and go on as if nothing happened. I think if the economy doesn't recover, if some of the concerns of the voters are not addressed, I think we're going to have to deal maybe with the same situation in the next round of elections 4 or 5 years down the road.
In terms of populism in Europe missing its chance, is such a conclusion a little previous? According to Dean Turner, economist and director in the UBS UK CIO.
I think it's a bit too soon to jump to that conclusion for a couple of reasons. Let's actually look at the French election results themselves. Yes, 30-point margin for Macron, it's a very large win and a very big victory, as has been reported. But if we actually look at some of the details of the vote, you know, turnout was low. It was the lowest turnout since the 1960s. Some 4 million of those who did actually vote, voted blank or spoiled their ballot paper. And analysis suggests that around 40% of those that did actually vote in favour of Mr Macron did so only to prevent Ms Le Pen getting into office, which is not unusual in these circumstances. I mean, that's how the French election system is designed. When we look at those numbers, one of the things that sticks in my mind is it's a big headline number, but underlying it hardly seems like a ringing endorsement for Mr Macron. So, you know, let's not read too much into the size of the result right now. For sure, the sign coming back from the French public was that they do not want a populist president. That's clear from the result. But even then, you know, more than one third of French voters actually opted for Ms Le Pen. And if we think back to the 2002 election when her father contested the election, he picked up around 12% of the vote. So this is a massive increase in support for FN over that time period. I think it's too early to conclude that the forces of populism have come to an end, but it's something we've still got to watch for the years ahead.
We also discussed Macron's success and what it may or may not represent with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management.
I don't believe that populism or anti-establishment politics has missed its chance. I think that the underlying economic factors that have led to the rise of anti-establishment political movements remain intact. And in many cases, as we face up to the structural challenges of the fourth industrial revolution, the dramatic changes that are going to be impacting society, those anti-establishment politics are likely to receive further support in the future. So the challenge, I think, for conventional parties is to try and find a solution to some of the economic challenges that lie ahead, and by doing so, perhaps, to weaken the foundations of anti-establishment party support. frankly, the populist movements are likely to remain a feature of the political landscape for several years to come, at the very least.
What about the French, well, Monegasque view? Does this result mark a change, a decisive shift in the populist progression in Europe? Marie Billon is a correspondent for French media based in London.
I think it's good news all around what happened in Europe and what happened in France. I'm not so sure we've seen the end of the populism rise, because now the mainstream party are talking a bit like the extreme party. I mean, we've been seeing that for some time. I mean, Nicolas Sarkozy took a few, lots of ideas from the Front National, dialed them down a bit. But in a way, immigration, this kind of thing, he knew he had to go on the Front National issues to be elected. It didn't work for him because he wasn't re-elected. But there's still this wish to try and cross over, taking the bits that would make people elected, but not to go too far as being a branded extremist. And today we have very concerning, I think, message from parties even in Britain. For example, when Theresa May is saying, oh, Europeans, some people in Brussels want to interfere into our election, she's pitting countries against each other. And that's exactly what extremists in, 60, 80 years ago were doing, saying we are enemies. They are enemies over there across this border. And that's, I do think that's very dangerous, this stance that mainstream party are starting to take. François Fillon was bordering with that. He wasn't elected, but he was from the centre-right. And I do think Theresa May is very much touching those lines.
In light of those observations around Theresa May and France, Quentin Peel of Chatham House and a former FT Europe bureau chief talks about a shift away from the old spectrum of left and right, instead to a new model of open or closed.
But aren't we seeing a remaking of the political spectrum? As has been said, instead of left versus right, the old tradition, are we not seeing a remaking along, if you like, open versus closed? The open part of society who is more positive about immigration, who's more positive about globalization, against those who really are feeling very threatened by both those things, who want to close the doors, who want to put up the barriers. And that in a way we're seeing in France, on both the extreme right, but also on the far left, the closed view, and in the centre, the open view, which in this case has come through with a majority. But in both Britain and maybe in the US as well, we saw that the open view actually lost.
Quentin Peel. Continuing the reality check about the extent to which Macron's success signposts wider change, how does he start to address some of the profound challenges facing France, from trying to strike a workable balance in terms of domestic politics to more of those old narratives we mentioned, industrial relations, structural reform, high unemployment, and delivering tens of billions of euros in cuts? I asked Dean Turner. He's got his work cut out, right?
Absolutely, yes. As we saw immediately after the election result was announced, there were protests on the street in anticipation of his Labour reforms, given that, as we saw in the first round, you know, Mr. Mélenchon, who was running on a very far-left ticket, managed to pick up just shy of 20% of the vote. Clearly, that suggests that he's going to face a number of challenges with the public in implementing his programme. But that's also assuming that he does have the power to implement a lot of his programmes, because we must remember that a president in France does need the support of his or her parliament in order to enact any legislation. And we have the parliamentary elections in June for France. Now, what very few opinion polls we have suggest that En Marche, or the newly renamed La République En Marche, are going to do relatively well in those elections. But it's far from clear that he's going to gain a majority there. So talk of any reforms at this stage do seem a little premature, because we've actually got to see the outcome of those parliamentary elections before we can have any certainty on where we're going.
How does Themistocleus think Macron can best start to address these pretty profound challenges facing France? Where should he start?
I suppose the very, very near-term challenge for him is how he does in the parliamentary elections, because I think that will be critical to his ability to deliver reforms. If he does manage to get a majority in parliament, which is a tall order, but the polls saying, current polls, which are very few, but they're saying that he could get close to majority. If he were to get majority in parliament, then would strengthen his hand to get some of these reforms through. And ultimately, I suppose, if he can deliver some of these reforms and the economy starts accelerating, that clearly strengthens his hand to introduce even more reforms. But if we end up with a very fragmented parliament and then he has to form a number of coalitions to get his reforms through, then obviously different parties will have different agendas and that manifesto and those promises become a little bit more challenging to deliver on.
Looking to industrial relations and structural reforms, high unemployment and that spending cut agenda, what next for Macron and France? Paul Donovan again.
The immediate challenge for President Macron, of course, is the fact that he doesn't have a party that has a majority in the National Assembly. Now, it's very early days in terms of polling for the June National Assembly elections, but it does seem unlikely that the En Marche movement is going to be able to gain an absolute majority. And that means that Macron is going through a period of what the French call cohabitation, whereby he doesn't necessarily govern with a prime minister of his own party, or at least a prime minister who is necessarily going to do what the president wants. The Fifth Republic is not really designed to deal with this sort of situation terribly well. And I think that that does raise questions about the ability of Macron to pursue a more radical reform agenda. Some degree of reform through consensus building can be achieved, I'm sure, but consensus building rarely produces radical policies.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at what all this means for investors. Next up, we asked Paul Donovan, what does all of this mean for investors?
For investors, I think it is important to remember that the underlying causes of anti-establishment politics are going to remain a feature for some time. That means that anti-establishment politics will influence mainstream politics and may have a bearing in local elections, referenda, and ultimately in 5 years' time in national elections in the major economies of Europe once again. So we shouldn't dismiss the anti-establishment situation. It is going to be there and investors need to be sensitive to it. More immediately, I think the focus of attention for investors in Europe is going to shift a little bit from the near-term political noise and more to the necessary reforms that will make the Eurozone in particular and the Euro area work as a monetary union. The Euro doesn't work today. There's no question about that in economic terms. It needs to be made to work better. And I think that investors are now going to be looking very closely as to how politicians can deliver on the necessary structural reform without further aggravating the anti-establishment political sentiment.
Themis Themistocleous also provided more insight on investment opportunities, including the wider global picture.
Clearly, if we don't have anything derailing the economic recovery in Europe, that's also positive globally. If I look at the global economy, this most probably will be the first year for a number of years that we have synchronized growth globally. Europe is growing, Latin America, which was in recession last year, is now growing, emerging markets doing better, the US is doing better, China is doing better. So you get synchronized global growth, which is positive for risky assets like global equities and some of the higher risk credit, but also the euro. We quite like the euro versus the dollar. And the growth in Europe is quite supportive. ECB at some stage most probably be looking to unwind or to taper quantitative easing. Most probably the announcement will come in September, given that political risk seems like it's subsiding. The growth is good. Inflation is picking up. That should be supportive for the euro.
Thus far, we've heard a good deal about all of these varied challenges. Maybe the dynamics are a little different than in the UK or the US, where the polls, for example, slipped up. But where are the opportunities? Dean Turner again.
As an economist, I think we're probably a little bit guilty of digging into some of the finer details of the challenges because that's ultimately what my job is. But from an investment perspective, I mean, you're absolutely right. This result will be taken as a positive by the market. The first reason being that, you know, the opinion polls were correct and it would seem that support for a populist leader in Europe's second largest economy is not as strong as many feared. That also, you know, it removes any residual risk or any residual concerns around France's ongoing membership of the euro. So this is clearly going to be a positive in terms of sentiment for investors. But also on the economy, we must remember business confidence and consumer confidence are likely to improve now that this headwind has been removed. And, you know, notwithstanding my concerns around what happens in the parliamentary elections, I'm sure that we will see some reforms come through from the new president. They're going to be hitting the economy at a time when we're already enjoying quite a positive cyclical upswing in activity across the whole of Europe and in France in particular. So certainly from an investment perspective and even from an economic growth perspective, I think there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic about the outlook for Europe over the next 12 months.
Finally on the programme, when does this story of political volatility, of unpredictability, end? Or is it just the new normal? Well, yes and no. Themistocleus takes up the story.
For Europe, we had an unusually heavy calendar. Elections in all the biggest economies in Europe, on top of Brexit and some other things that have been going on. So maybe it's been a little bit of an unusual situation. But again, Europe, if we go back, there's always something going on, some crisis here or there. Greece is not gone away. We haven't mentioned that there's still quite a lot of debt in Italy. What happens once ECB stops quantitative easing? So I think some of these issues will still be around, immigration. But I think we've just gone through an unusually heavy political calendar. But I think in terms of investments, the way we look at it is this political landscape having any impact on the economy, which ultimately is what drives markets, or is just that providing noise? And if it's not impacting the economy or has the capacity to impact the economy, then we need to look through it and just make sure we keep a close eye on what happens to the economy, because ultimately that is what drives markets.
What does Dean Turner think about this era of political volatility and whether it is indeed a new normal we should prepare for? And are investors ignoring political risks elsewhere?
As an economist, I think we're probably a little bit guilty of digging into some of the finer details of the challenges, because that's ultimately what my job is. But from an investment perspective, I mean, you're absolutely right. This result will be taken as a positive by the markets. The first reason being that, you know, the opinion polls were correct, and it would seem that support for a populist leader in Europe's second largest economy is not as strong as many feared. That also, you know, it removes any residual risk or any residual concerns around France's ongoing membership of the euro. So this is clearly going to be a positive in terms of sentiment for investors. But also on the economy, we must remember business confidence and consumer confidence are likely to improve now that this headwind has been removed. And, you know, notwithstanding my concerns around what happens in the parliamentary elections, I'm sure that we will see some reforms come through from the new president. They're going to be hitting the economy at a time when we're already enjoying quite a positive cyclical upswing in activity across the whole of Europe and in France in particular. So certainly from an investment perspective and even from an economic growth perspective, I think there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic about the outlook for Europe over the next 12 months.
Paul Donovan, meanwhile, cites some underlying challenges that suggest, in his view, a period of upheaval is set fair to continue.
I believe that because the underlying economic causes of political volatility, unpredictability, anti-establishment politics are around income inequality and are around relative social position, this is something which is going to endure for quite some time. With changes around robotics, technology, artificial intelligence, the virtual economy, we're going to be in a period of social upheaval. Industrial revolutions are called revolutions for a reason. With that, there is going to be, I think, always a group in society that is unhappy with the direction that society is taking. People generally don't like change, and economically, there is a lot of change now lying ahead. In that situation, I think that the political volatility and the anti-establishment aspects that we've been seeing will persist for some time. The question is, to what extent are mainstream political parties able to counteract the forces driving that anti-establishment politics, or possibly to incorporate some anti-establishmentism into the mainstream politics, as we saw, for example, with the Dutch. I would suggest that the uncertainty in markets around politics is going to persist for several years if not a decade or more.
And that's Paul Donovan, bringing us to the end of this 136th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more, as ever, at monocle.com. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.